Knowledge is power, and we are all about empowering the mamas of the world. In each episode, we will unravel and interpret the latest research and evidence-based practices for pregnancy, postpartum, and motherhood. As mums and researchers ourselves, we have experienced firsthand the overwhelming complexity of information, myths, and those classic old wives' tales. I'm Dr. Renee White, and this is The Science of Motherhood.
Hello, and welcome to episode 113 of The Science of Motherhood. I am your host, Dr. Renee White. Thank you so much for joining me today. We have a little research wrap-up today in our Check-in Tuesday episode. I've been trawling the internets on PubMed, having a look at the latest research in pregnancy and postpartum, and something caught my eye, which was published, it was last week. Yeah, last week in the Archives of Women's Mental Health. It's a topic that is getting a lot of press at the moment, I think, with just an influx of diagnoses in ADHD, particularly in women. We have had previous episodes on, you know, ADHD and motherhood. If you're interested in having a look at some of those, I would jump back into episode 94. We talked to Jane McFadden around her personal experience as someone who was diagnosed with ADHD and how she kind of tackles motherhood and I guess the before and after of her diagnosis as well. So that is actually a very popular episode. I've received quite a lot of feedback about that. But before we jump in today's episode, I just wanted to remind everyone that whilst I'm not in front of the microphone, I am leading the charge with Fill Your Cup, which is Australia's premier doula service here in Australia. And if you are a mama-to-be or you've just had a baby or you know someone who's having a baby and you kind of are thinking, oh, I wish they had some extra care and support around them. They don't have any friends or family. They might be international, you know, mamas. And we have a lot of those mums who are birthing their babies here in Australia and their friends and family are overseas or in their another state. We can help you with all things parenthood. Our role is essentially to nurture and nourish you when your baby arrives so you get a proper rest and repleted with all of those beautiful micronutrients that our babies suck the life out of us with. And so we offer doula services where a doula can come to your house weekly. It's typically weekly. It's visits 3 hours at a time. You get a beautiful menu each week to choose from. You get some nourishing meals. So think like hunter chicken stew. We do a pumpkin and lentil stew. We do, oh, my favorite is our chocolate, raspberry and sweet potato gooey brownies. They are very, very popular snacks. Oh my goodness. What are the other things that we do? I'm just looking at pictures now on our website and you can do that. You can have a look at some of the food. If you go to ifillyourcup.com and click on the offerings tab and scroll down, you can see some of the food that we offer. So we have our pulled pork tacos. We've got our beautiful choc goji lactation cookies. Oh, it's just endless. So if that's your jam, if food is your jam, if you're looking for someone to help you navigate motherhood, we are your people. So we offer doula services in Victoria, in New South Wales, and in Tasmania. Jump onto our website, have a look. If you're looking for a beautiful gift as a baby shower, they are very, very popular. We have Fill My Cup Days, so they're single sessions. You can also jump on to the website and grab your BFF a gift voucher as well. So without further ado, I am going to jump into today's Check-in Tuesday episode, which is our fortnightly episode where I talk about something I've seen in the research, something that's caught my eye, favorite recipe, or it might just be me ranting about motherhood. We all need to share the load. But I haven't done one of these in a while, so I thought I would jump in because this particular paper caught my eye. One, because they're Australian researchers. I love celebrating Australian researchers. For all those playing at home, if you are new to the science of motherhood, I used to be a researcher back in the day. So I've got a PhD in biochemistry and I was in, academia and public health research for a very long time. So it would have been like close to a decade in researching. And in today's episode, I wanted to talk to you about a paper that I came across, which is investigating maternal and neonatal health outcomes associated with continuing or ceasing dexamphetamine treatment for women who have ADHD, which I thought was a really interesting topic. Now, ADHD has, as I said at the beginning of the episode, it's getting a lot of airplay. I think synonymously we've known that perhaps diagnoses of girls, particularly my generation, so I'm bridging the 40 next year, kind of went unknown. You know, a lot of girls were quiet and that's kind of how they manifested, you know, their symptoms. Quiet, introverted kind of, you know, thing, but still kind of hypervigilant around certain things, focusing. If you listen to Jane's episode, as I said in episode 94, you can hear about how she kind of went for a really long time without a diagnosis, because I think we typically back in the day associated it with like hyperactivity, which is, you know, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's kind of how it was named, which I think in females it displays as other things. So this paper was looking at essentially what would happen if you had, for example, a woman who was on, this is the other thing we need to focus on. It's just looking at the dexamphetamine as the drug. Now, there's a couple of others on the market, but this paper is just focusing on dex. I'm going to call it dex for short. And it's essentially looking at, you know, what would happen if we had a group where we continued dex throughout the entire pregnancy, versus we ceased dex treatment before, I think it's the second trimester. And then there's a third group where they were actually unexposed. So they stopped dex before they became pregnant. Okay. So we've got three groups. One is continuation through the entire pregnancy. The second, which is called the continuers, that's the first group. The second one is the ceasing group. So they've ceased it before the second trimester. And then we've got the unexposed. And so I think what was really interesting was, you know, let's frame this in the sense that there's not a lot of research around the effects of the drug and the safety of dex in pregnancy. Kind of really hasn't been adequately demonstrated. It's a tough one in research. You know, when you're looking at drugs in clinical research, pregnant ladies are not exactly, you know, forthcoming to kind of test themselves out on with these types of things. And so, yeah, we're lacking a bit of research. But this particular data set is something that they got from just Western Australia. So that's the other limitation that we need to talk about. And you will hear me bang on about this when it comes to research. We always need to look at what the limitations were. And so there's been a couple of studies in this area, but as the authors of this particular paper describe, you know, the exact prevalence of worldwide kind of psychostimulant medication use in pregnant women with ADHD is very much unknown. There have been some studies in Norway and Sweden that kind of look at these things, and we'll talk about that at the end because we always need to compare what this study found and then, you know, what others have found as well. But typically the guidelines are that if women become pregnant while on dex treatment, your GP typically advises you to either reduce or cease DEX treatment to reduce exposure or potential harm to your developing baby. But as these authors have described, you know, this particular piece of advice is based on really limited kind of empirical evidence. And so they wanted to explore, I guess, you know, what the effects were if that's the case, because as they describe, you know, there are some instances where there are unplanned pregnancies and you might not know until close to the second trimester that you are actually pregnant. And so what are the effects of that in particular? And so what this actually demonstrated, and I'll talk you through, I guess, the stats of what actually happened, because that's the other thing that we need to think about when we're looking at research. How big was the sample size that we're actually looking at? So in terms of the methodology of this particular study, they took a population-based retrospective cohort of women. So what does that actually mean? So they were looking at data between the years 2003 to 2018. So this is not data where they've gone out and kind of sourced their own patients. As I said, they looked at women who either continued taking DEX throughout the pregnancy, and this is called the continuers. Now, that sample size was 547 people. And then they looked at those who ceased the DEX treatment before the end of the second trimester. And that sample size was just under 300 people. Additionally, what they did was they matched one-to-one a comparison group of women who were dispensed the ADHD medication prior to pregnancy, but not during pregnancy. So this is the unexposed group. And they had 844 people within that particular group. Now, what they showed is actually really interesting. Because as I said, you know, we don't really have a lot of empirical evidence around what the health outcomes are for both maternal and your baby. And so I'm just going to work through some of the, I guess, highlights of the study. So they looked at things like, you know, typical pregnancy complications, preeclampsia, hypertension, antepartum hemorrhage, threatened early labor. And then in terms of like neonatal outcomes, they were looking at things like preterm birth, Apgar scores, you know, neonatal length of stay in hospital, you know, in the special care unit and things like that. So what did they actually find? This is really, really interesting. What they found was that the ceases group were more than twice as likely to have a threatened abortion than those in the continued group. There was no difference between the proportion of unexposed and continuous in terms of threatened abortion. There was no significant difference in preeclampsia between the ceases and the continuous. The unexposed group were less likely to develop preeclampsia compared to the continuous. The unexposed had a lower level of developing hypertension compared to the continuous. Less than five ceases were diagnosed with hypertension, making the comparison a bit unreliable. The unexposed women also had a lower risk of having postpartum hemorrhage compared to the continuous. However, the risk of antepartum hemorrhage did not differ between the two groups. So that was really, really interesting. So I guess what they kind of concluded also was, you know, in terms of neonatal outcomes, they compared the neonates of the continuers and the average length of gestation in the ceases neonates was 0.33 weeks longer. The neonates of the unexposed also had a slightly longer average estimated length of gestation by 0.3 weeks compared with babies from the continuer group. In terms of special care unit, the babies of the continuers and the ceases had comparable levels of admittance to that special care unit and fetal distress, whilst the babies from the unexposed group were 84% less likely to be admitted to the special care unit and exhibit signs of fetal distress than those from the continuers. I guess the main findings from this is that continued DEX treatment for ADHD during pregnancy didn't appear to be associated with negative maternal or neonatal health outcomes when compared to the group that ceased DEX treatment during pregnancy, so that second group. So that would infer that women with ADHD may not need to be discouraged from continuing their DEX treatment during pregnancy, as they found no association with an increased risk of severe adverse maternal or, you know, baby health outcomes. However, they do say that, you know, they need further research around this to support it. And we'll get to those limitations in a second. But the other point that they say is that looking at those groups that kind of continued or ceased during pregnancy, there does appear to be an advantage or like a decreased risk of preeclampsia, hypertension, postpartum hemorrhage, admissions to the special care unit and fetal distress for those who actually ceased DEX treatment use prior to pregnancy. So when we're looking at all of that data, we need to look at the limitations. This is obviously a single study. We need to take that into context with the sample size, where it's from, where the data's from, what are the things that they did and didn't take into account. So, and this goes with anything. If you are reading a paper, you always need to look at the limitations. And if they don't talk about the limitations, it's probably not a good paper. So I would move on from that. So I guess in terms of limitations, first of all, the sample size was, it was a large study. It was over a 16-year period. It's confined to Western Australia. So that is a single state here in Australia. How could it be better? It obviously, world, you know, better, a kind of genetic pool is always better. Data they couldn't examine or control for were things like exposure to the medications, so actual medication use, adherence, timing of the medication, things like if there was a pregnancy loss prior to 20 weeks, that was actually quite a big one that I kind of thought, oh, that's interesting. Confounders as well in the study. So the severity of a woman's ADHD, as well as alcohol consumption during pregnancy. These are, really high level things that weren't part of the data set that they didn't have access to as well. So in terms of, what the next step up, obviously, this data matches with some other studies that have been done around the world. As I kind of alluded to before, I think there was some in Norway and there was a Danish study as well. But essentially, like with all research, you answer one question and you get you get 20 more questions that come out of it. So the authors here, I think, are going to continue on with studying next steps. But also, as I said at the beginning, this is just around the DEX treatment. They haven't looked at like everything. And so that's probably going to be a next step as well. And they're probably going to look at other factors. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any further questions around this particular paper, feel free to jump into our social media. I'm typically on Instagram. We're at fillyourcup_. Send me a DM. Say, hey, Renee, I really love that episode. Can you send me through the link to the paper? If you want to know more, if this is a topic of interest that you want me to really kind of deep dive into, feel free to let me know. I can absolutely do that in another episode. But until then, see ya. Bye. If you loved this episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. If you know someone out there who would also love to listen to this episode, please hit the share button so they can benefit from it as well. Thank you for listening to The Science of Motherhood. We'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Science of Motherhood. If you would like to contact us, we are at ifillyourcup.com, or you can DM us at ifillyourcup_ via Instagram. You can find all of our services, including our postpartum in-home care and our Fill Your Freezer meal delivery service as well, through both those channels. Thanks so much for listening.